Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Now, here's a question. Why do you sometimes look more forward to hanging out with your friends than you do your own family? It may be because we choose and expect a little less from them, but there's little doubt that friends are critically important even when it comes to your health. Carlin Flora has examined all this in a new book, Friendfluence, The Surprising Ways Friends Make Us Who We Are. Later on today, we'll talk to the man who leaped off the Liberty Memorial this morning and got his parachute deployed just in time in one of the more remarkable stunts I've come across. Major Alistair McCartney will join us. But first up, Carlin Flora and friends. Carlin was on the staff at Psychology Today magazine for 8 years. She's been on Oprah Winfrey. Carlin Flora was on the staff, as I said, for Psychology Today for 8 years, and she speaks in town tomorrow. And Carlin, so good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you and I share an experience, Carlin. We both moved when we were 15 years old. In your case, you moved from North Carolina to Michigan. In mine, it was Ohio to Minnesota. How traumatic was that for you, and how did you find your way out of your own dilemma there?
Right. I think moving at that age is hard because that's when friends really are paramount. And for me, it was the experience of not just having to make new friends, but having to really find the niche that was right for me. And then on the flip side, those new friends kind of brought out a side of me that hadn't been expressed back in North Carolina. So I think it instilled in me this principle that I explore in my book, which is that friends really influence how you develop. And it made me very sensitive to the loss of friends, too, and how traumatic that can be and why we should cherish them.
Yeah, talk about, hey, you were walking across a gymnasium floor when you sort of spotted your new group of friends in your new home state. What was that moment like for you? Because, again, I can sort of relate to that moment when you finally begin to connect with someone that you can sort of get along with.
Right. I mean, that's what we're all trying to do, is to connect to people who really get us. And
yeah,
it's a little bit mysterious. It is akin to falling in love when you know, see that partner across the dance floor and you end up falling in love.
Yeah.
I think there is some similarities with friends. It's just this notion that this person is going to get me and I'm going to feel comfortable with them. And a lot of times, you know, the research does show that we choose people who are similar to us. But also sometimes befriending people who are a little bit different can really expand your horizons and make that friendship even more satisfying.
Yeah. You know, this notion that friends can actually improve our health, explain that to us, because that's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, this is the most startling part of the friend research, is that friends have an enormous impact on your mental health and physical health. Just one example, one study that was kind of a meta-analysis, putting a lot of studies together, found that having not enough friends is the mortality risk equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
That's an interesting corollary there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, obviously there's been great public health campaigns against smoking, but we don't really see much about how friends will really have even more of an impact on your longevity and health.
You know, I remember in my own life, I went to my first newspaper in, of all places, Freeport, Illinois, a number of years ago. And, you know, I didn't know anybody in town. And after 2 or 3 weeks of not knowing anybody in town, I finally came across a couple roughly my age, Mike and Marcia Klusmeyer. And I remember meeting them and hanging out with them for the first night and sort of going home feeling like there was 25 pounds off my back. I hadn't sort of relaxed in a number of weeks. And it's funny how that moment can resonate with you as strongly as that one did with me.
But that's a beautiful story. Yeah. And I think it's sort of the antidote to that existential loneliness we all feel sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. You also raise the question, and it's a great question, of why dinner with friends sometimes is a lot more fun than dinner with families. And I have to admit, I've experienced that feeling before, too. I will admit it. Why is that?
Right. I think families bring they bring years of sort of complicated histories with them. And also families are intertwined with daily obligations, right? They're kind of fraught with the parts of life that are unpleasant, whereas friends are really an oasis from the daily grind.
Yeah. Yeah.
One psychologist actually gave beepers to subjects and had them, you know, beeped them and then had them write down how they were feeling and who they were with. And time with friends was more pleasant than time with spouses or children. So some people kind of take offense to that, like, but my children are precious, but and of course they give meaning to life. But as far as day-to-day mood, friends kind of energize you and give you the vitality that you need to go back to your spouse and children and really put a lot into those important relationships.
You know, when I'm reading that, I'm thinking, of course, about my own experience. And I'm thinking, you know, I shouldn't feel this way. I have felt this way. I feel a little guilty about it. Like, this is not the way it's supposed to roll, but it actually is the way it rolls, right?
Right. Don't feel guilty at all. And this is, you know, just yet another reason why friendship perhaps is underappreciated.
Yeah. You talk in this book about this notion that if you go to the bookstore, you can find lots of books about parenting. And God knows how many books about relationships and what to do with them. But when it comes to maintaining friendships, I was just struck by this. There really wasn't anything, at least when you went and looked. Why is that?
Right. Yeah. I think it's because sort of friends are consistent. We have them from the time we're two or three till old age. And maybe we just take them for granted because they're always in there in the background, whereas romantic relationships or parenting are associated with these transitions. So I think that's one reason people might want to grab a book during that transition. But I also think it's really about the need to be conscious about these relationships. A lot of people are very conscious of, okay, what kind of partner do I want to find?
Yeah.
What kind of parent do I want to be?
Yeah.
We rarely say, what kind of friend do I want to
yes.
be? What kind of friends do I want to have? And the friends you have sort of effortlessly lift you to their level and their standards. So all the more reason you need to be more conscious when you're choosing them.
Isn't part of the deal with friends, there's this unspoken contract, it seems to me, that you're not supposed to worry about friends. That's the whole idea, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you sort of do take them for granted because if it's a lot of effort, they're not going to be your friend much longer.
Right. And I guess that is one of the positive aspects of friendship, that comfort that we've been talking about is, you know, maybe you don't have to work as hard as you would in some other relationships. But I think that we underestimate how much we sort of adopt the values and norms of our friend group and therefore need to make sure we're with the right group, even as adults.
Do you find yourself doing a lot of time with maintenance when it comes to your own friendships?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you do that a lot or not really?
Well, I think it's a balance. I think that women in particular, and this is what a lot of psychologists told me when I interviewed them, are kind of afraid of conflict. They think conflict is not consistent with friendship. So instead of talking about men too. Instead of talking about little slights or hurts, they let the resentments build up or they just kind of move away from the friendship in a way which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we just kind of learned that conflict is a part of friendship and get those sort of little resentments out of the way, then we can have healthier friendships overall.
You know, it's an interesting point, this idea of the differences in friendships between men and women. You know, my experience has been, you know, Garrison Keillor, who I have spent too much of my life listening to, he talks about the fact that men are these lonely, solitary creatures sort of patrolling the earth, and there's a lot of truth to that. You know, as I get older and I look at my wife and her relationships with her friends, I mean, those relationships are on just very significant levels beyond what I find my friendships. You know, I have some great friends, terrific friends, but boy, you know, my wife's friendships are just so much more active, so much more of a daily part of her life in some ways maybe than mine. So I guess the question is, what is the difference between male and female friendships, or is there one?
Mm-hmm. Traditionally, the saying goes, men have friendships shoulder to shoulder and women have friendships face to face, that men would share activities. They go fishing together.
Yes.
Women would
yes.
have coffee and talk. You know, I think that still holds up somewhat, although roles for men and women are changing so much that those friendships are also changing. There's also more cross-sex friendship than there used to be. Men and women are friends more often. My favorite quote with respect to men and women is from Anne Morrow Lindbergh. She said, "Men throw friendship around like a football and it never cracks. Women treat it like glass and it falls to pieces."
So, that's a great line.
Yeah, I think it just goes to that thing of women, you know, I think the friendships are more important to them. They make more of an effort to keep in touch with people. But then on the flip side, they have more conflict or don't know how to deal with the conflict as much.
This idea that there are more cross-gender friendships, what are you seeing along those lines? Because that's an interesting idea to me, too. Sometimes I find you go to a party, talking to women has always been easier to me somehow than talking to men. How's that for a broad statement? But in general, I have found that to be the case.
Yeah, I think a lot of men feel that way because they feel that they have permission to be open with women, whereas
yes.
if they're too open with a man,
yes.
there might be sort of a cultural taboo against
yes.
that or even a homophobia that creeps into it.
Yes.
So yeah, I think a lot of men get in particular cherish friendships with women because it allows them to bring out their expressive emotional side.
Yeah. Let me get our listeners involved here in our conversation this morning about friendship. Our guest today, Carlin Flora, her book is Friendfluence, The Surprising Ways Friends Make Us Who We Are. She's delivering the Cockafair Lecture tomorrow on the UMKC campus. That lecture is sold out, but she's here in town for that annual event, a very good event here at UMKC. Do your friends influence who you are? In what way? And do you find yourself speaking differently, acting differently around your friends than perhaps you do your own spouse, your own kids? We have a great expert here in the house. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at @kcurupdate. Let's go to some calls here. Again, 816-235-2888. Al from Kansas City, Missouri. Al, good morning.
Good morning. Good discussion, an important one. I've always felt that friendships were as valuable as any other relationship and more delicate because they don't have a contract, you know, to legally secure them. But I'm having problems with this discussion being so much about gender. I find that, you know, that the quality of the friendship is equal in many ways, male or female. I think we tend to do it more through symbolic rituals. We tend to bond that way, and women more through discussion and various kinds of other bonding. But men are definitely, their friendships are as intimate and profound and as delicate as women's friendships. I mean, I've had friendships fall apart that were very unexpected and very traumatic, because I thought the rituals were all in place and everybody was happy and everything was going along fine. Women may have one escape route, which is they discuss things more. But I don't think it's a gender-based issue. That's my
comment. Yeah, Al, thanks. Hang on. Let's let Carlin respond here.
Yeah, I do agree absolutely that overall there are more similarities than there are differences when you're comparing friendships between the genders, but just some of the differences I talked about, such as women in conflict, do come up according to psychologists who have dealt with this. But I think every individual has their own friendship style, and I'm glad to hear that you value friends so much, because the benefits of friends for men are definitely just as strong as they are for women.
You know, they're our extended family. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm. Al, thanks for the good call. I sure appreciate it.
Okay, love you, bye.
You bet. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, and our Twitter address, @kcurupdate. Michael from Overland Park. Michael, you're on the show. Good morning. Michael, you there? He was going to talk about friendships with women are because he was raised by a household full of women. Make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What we're used to, what we're comfortable with. I think it is a little bit harder for married people to make friends of people with the opposite sex. But there's really good research that says married couples who have couple friends that they double date with,
yeah,
are happier. And I think the reason for that is really interesting. It's that it's a chance to see your spouse shine, because she's trying to be charming and funny with this other couple in a way that we, you know, men and women both sometimes forget to do when we're in that long-term relationship.
That's
get
really
to see your partner
idea.
Shine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, again, there's more of that going on, cross-gender friendships. Mm-hmm. We are seeing more of that these days?
Yeah. Younger people are much more likely, I think four times as likely to have a friend of the opposite sex than people over 55. So I think that's just shifting as men and women work together, as peers, mm-hmm, et cetera.
What do we know about what it takes for two people to click on a friendship level? Do we know what it is that brings two people together to begin with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so similarity is a big factor. We tend to choose friends who are like us on different demographic factors, such as race, age, class, et cetera.
Why is that?
Yeah, it's just what I was saying before.
We want
before
people sort of like ourselves.
Yeah, it's just easier to interact with. It's easier to sort of guess what they're going to think is funny, what they're going to think is interesting,
yeah,
and not sort of get tongue-tied and feeling like you're saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But there is evidence that, you know, kids who go to small colleges, for example, where there's a smaller pool of friends to choose from, they end up making friends with people different from themselves simply because they have to. And those friendships are rated as more satisfying than friendships at kids from big universities who can find people exactly like them.
So, why would that? That's interesting. Why is that?
So that's a little caveat that even though our natural instinct is to choose people just like us, if we kind of fight against that, the friendship might be more satisfying. And they're not exactly sure why, but it's, you know, I imagine it just broadens our horizons. And also on the smaller campus, there's this idea that I have to cherish the friendship because there are only a few choices here. So I have to commit to it.
That's really interesting to me, that big school, small school thing.
Yeah.
Back to some calls. Michael's called back from Overland Park. Michael, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I just was going to make a comment about friendships with women. I guess I tend to have I'm more comfortable with women just because I was raised by sisters and mother, you know, no father, got two girls and a wife, you know, so it's like it's always been women. And so I don't have that traditional kind of, you know, go out and smoke a cigar with the guys, go play golf, tools, garage, all that kind of stuff that's maybe typical of men. I don't have that kind of relationship. And so, you know, I'm just very comfortable with women. And that's, you know, I think it's because of the upbringing, you know.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, and it probably makes you a great father and husband that you have these relationships that help you understand the opposite sex.
Yeah. Michael,
thank you.
And just wondering, if our listeners have the experience of having friendships across genders, do those relationships work for you or not? What's your own take? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. David from Kansas City, Missouri. David, you're on with Carl and Flora. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. Go ahead, David.
I was curious if you found any differences between how you're raised and siblings. I'm a single child. I didn't have any siblings, and I find that I have a lot fewer friends, but the friends that I do make tend to be a lot tighter of a bond than a lot of my friends that have siblings. They tend to have a lot more friends that don't have as the way I perceive it, a deeper connection.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, there is some evidence that only children have more intense friendships. And I think that's interesting because only children are a big trend in our society. The number of only children has doubled in the last, I think 20 or 30 years. So more and more as families sort of decide to pare down for economic reasons or other reasons, friends will become even more important to these children because they won't have those in-house playmates.
Yeah. Interesting. David, thank you for the call.
Yep, thank you.
Let's go to Ken from Overland Park. Ken, good morning. You're on Up to Date.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm in a drive-through car wash. If you can't hear me, I'll hang up, sir. I hope you can't hear me. I'm just commenting on a tangential fact, and that is, personally, I've experienced that after getting laid off and not having worked for the last 3 years and having our financial situation change drastically, that a huge number of friends, including immediate family and siblings, et cetera, have become far less of a friend over the last 3 years as our financial situation changed. They almost don't want to talk to us anymore. Maybe they're fearful we may ask for borrowing money, but although we never have, the how are you phone calls don't come in anymore, don't get invited out with everybody to go have a big dinner with eight couples anymore.
Wow.
Which I can understand that if they know that you aren't doing well financially, but it's been a big surprise to me, a real, real big learning point for me. Friends that I've had for 35, 40 years, they'll often say, I'll get back with you. I'm busy right now. Because they don't want to hear. The best I can determine is they don't want to hear when they ask, how are you, to the awful true answer, still unemployed, about to lose our home, wife still has cancer, and that seems to be it. Friendships seem to be very ephemeral and affected by financial standing.
Yeah. Oh, boy, Ken, that's tough to hear. You know, this notion that friendships aren't forever and, you know, what do we know about that, Carlin, in terms of how long they typically last? Are there stats on that out there?
Yeah, and I am so sorry to hear that because this is a situation where you need a friend more than ever, and yet you're finding that your friends are not able to deal with your situation and sustain the relationship. So I would encourage you to try to find new connections with people. And friends, one study showed that our friend groups basically 50% of your friend group will flip over every 7 years. So those numbers that you call frequently right now, half of them you won't be calling frequently in 7 years. So there is. On one hand, friendship is stable because we have them at all ages. But as far as those individual pairings, yeah, they do change. And, you know, another caller talked about a friend breakup. I think these are really hard. And again, you look at the culture, there's probably millions of songs about romantic breakups. I can't think of any song about friend breakup. So, you know, your boss is not going to give you a day off if you have a friend breakup, whereas if you're going through a divorce, your coworkers are quite supportive. So it's just another instance where the culture is not really caught up with the emotional experiences that we have.
You know, you talk about in the book people forming friendships in childhood that survive into adulthood, and you talk about the friendship between Suzanne Ludlum and her friend Denise in this book. Mm-hmm. Using those two as an example, I mean, what factors determine the longevity of a friendship? What does it take for one to last as many years as Suzanne and Denise's have?
Right. So in their case, you know, Suzanne lost her parents when she was fairly young. She was a teenager, a young adult. And so Denise was the only person who actually knew her family. So this was this last sort of connection thread to her family. So I think that really motivated her to keep up the friendship, because if she loses Denise, she loses someone who knew who she was before, and that we just need that. We crave that continuity in life and that ability to reminisce with someone who knows what we're talking about. And just the sacrifices they've been willing to make, flying across the country to take care of each other when one was sick, and, you know, making the effort to keep in touch. I think when we're busy with family and jobs, friends go to the bottom of the priority list. But, you know, sort of ironically, if we bump them to the top, we're much healthier in those other areas.
And again, there is a built-in flexibility factor with friends. It just, again, those two ideas seem to, at least in my mind, seem to connect pretty closely, you know?
Yeah, the flexibility is its strength. You can have periods of not talking to someone, and then you can pick it back up again. And
you, at least in my case, I assume they understand, which sometimes I guess you're probably assuming too much, but that's probably how my mind works, you know?
Right. I mean, I think that one piece of advice for being a better friend is to cut all of your friends some slack. But at the same time, yeah, we need to reach out and show our friends how we value them. One example I like is the friend anniversary. You know, a lot of couples will have dinner even after 6 months when friends will not even acknowledge 20 or 30 years of friendship.
Yeah.
So it's just a good way to kind of say, hey, maybe we don't talk every day, and maybe I go through periods where we're not in touch, but you're really important to me, and I value our friendship.
Let's go to Bob from Lenexa. Bob, you're on with Carla and Flora, her book, Friendfluence, The Surprising Ways Friends Make Us Who We Are. Bob, good morning.
Hi. I was just thinking, you mentioned that we oftentimes pick friends that are similar to us. The experiences that I've had are, one, I had a man who liked to drink, but he didn't like to drink alone. So he poured a half glass of vodka, started doing that, brought it over to my office, and I didn't drink it. So I noticed he took it over to another friend. Eventually, the person he took to in that office became an alcoholic and lost everything. But he was more comfortable by having someone drink with him because it validated his drinking habit. We had friends that we all smoked. We had dinner with them, did something almost every week. When my wife and I quit smoking, we never had dinner again together, ever. So many of our habits make us more comfortable if we have someone that does the same thing. I'll leave it with that and let you discuss that.
Yeah, Bob, thanks.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was emphasizing the positive health influences of friends, but the negative effects are just as strong, that these behaviors like smoking and drinking absolutely spread through friend groups.
Yeah.
And these behaviors become the norm. And we have a tendency to want to fit in with our friend group. And so we adopt the behaviors. So I think it's very interesting that you saw that in your own life. And also, you know, obesity. If your friend if a friend gains weight, you're very likely to also gain weight. And it's something that just happens slowly over time as, you know, different norms about eating and exercise go through the group. So, yeah, if friends are powerful, as I'm arguing, they can be for the better or for the worse.
Yeah. How about you, your own life? You have friendships that are long lasting, or how is it? How have your friends shaped the writing of this book?
Yeah, they've absolutely shaped the writing of the book, because I think starting with the move that we talked about at the outset of the show, that made me very sensitive to friendship in a sort of sentimental way. And then more specifically, I have one friend who I've been friends with for about 18, 19 years now. And we just recently vacationed together. I went to visit my parents and she drove her family and we all vacationed together. And that was a really nice symbolic moment for me now that the book is out, because it sort of was the manifestation of my value of, you know, valuing friends as much as family.
Yeah.
And having that time together.
That can be kind of risky, spending that much time together. Was it risky for you or not really?
Well, no, we don't live in the same state, my friend and I. So this was a chance for us to see each other and see my parents. So it was sort of getting the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, you know, I've become friends with more writers, and that absolutely helped me through this process of writing the book and even the nuts and bolts of it, of, you know, getting an agent and that sort of thing. I think that if you want to be in a certain career, it's naive to think you can succeed without having friends in that same career, because it really is a way that those values spread.
Mm-hmm. You know, Carlin, what do we know about the theories that are out there as to when and why people first begin forming friendships, when they're kids? When do friendships begin, and how do they evolve as the years pass?
Right. Well, one, I think this is just so cute. Even one-year-olds will show a preference. If they are exposed to the same kids regularly, such as in a play group, they will start to show preferences.
Really?
And we don't even know why, but they will show preferences.
Have you watched that happen? Have you witnessed that kind of research?
I have a one-year-old, so I was kind of attuned to that because of having written the book. And I do see that he kind of lights up a little bit with certain kids, and I have no idea why. But So it start that spark, you know, we show that early on. And then, you know, there's one researcher named Judith Rich Harris who argues that other than the genes that parents pass on to their kids, parenting behaviors really have no effect on how kids turn out, that it's all about the peer group. So the way that a child, you know, fits into the peer group shapes their personality and determines how they turn out in life. It's their world, and it's
more so than parenting.
She argues more so than parenting. Just one example I'll give you that really clarifies it. What accents do kids adopt, the ones of their parents or their peers? Well, we know it's their peers. Many immigrant families come here and speak the native language in the home, and yet children always have the regional accent of their peers. That is who they are built to fit in with. And if you can think about it in evolutionary terms, the peers represent the tribe that will help them survive. And the parents are already on their way out. They don't matter anymore. So.
I have an 18-year-old going off to college for the first time in a couple of weeks. And believe me, that feeling of not mattering anymore, I know exactly what you're talking about. Friendship is our topic this morning. Our guest, Carlin Flora, her book, Friendfluence, The Surprising Ways Friends Make Us Who We Are, 816-235-2888. Lots of men calling. This is interesting. Not as many women calling as I thought. Let's go to Remy from Kansas City, Missouri. Remy, good morning.
Good morning, folks. And I was just about to say the exact same thing. I haven't heard one other thing, maybe one woman call in through this whole show.
That just surprises me.
I guess we're all feeling our female side today.
Yeah.
What I was going to mention, and you guys were talking about folks having friendships in their own demographics. I do have those friends, for the obvious note, but I also have a couple of friends that they're not in my age group, they're not in my income group, they're not in my interest group. They're just people I've met along through life, and for whatever reason, they've either exceeded me or I've exceeded them in certain ways. And a lot of times it's hard to maintain friendships like those, especially those that where they have not done as well as I have, and they're having troubles with things. You want to be their friends, but you find yourself trying to fix things in life, and, you know, not so much fix things, but helping them with things in their life that they're having troubles with instead of just enjoying a friendship.
Hmm.
And then, of course, then I have friends that I've had since kindergarten who are in my same demographic, same, you know, as far as where we are in life and family and things like that. And I'm 47, I'll soon be 48, and I can't think of one time that we argued anything above the fact that he thinks I can't sing. But, you know, that's just an ongoing issue that we're working on.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the good call, Remy. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you. Yeah. Before you go, just a couple final questions here, Carl, and so many interesting things. You point out in the book that there's a correlation between brain size and the size of our individual social group, meaning there's a limit to how many friends our brains can handle. What's that about?
Yeah, this was a really interesting study that looked at a particular area of the cortex and compared it to how many friends the subject said she had been in touch with that, I think it was that week. And the idea behind it is that if your brain is thicker in this area, you just sort of have a better memory for people and you're more conscious of keeping track of people.
Mm-hmm.
The people who had more friends they weren't necessarily more satisfied. So I think that there's a caveat of quality versus quantity, that you definitely need those few quality friends to receive all these benefits we've been talking about. But, you know, having tons of acquaintances, even if you're capable of it for some sort of, physiological reason,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily make you happier. But one sort of general thing is that we tend to have about 150 friends and acquaintances. So some of those, you know, those are not all your dear friends, but that also correlates to the average size of tribes in the sort of evolutionary era. So that's just kind of what we're built to keep track of.
Well, I've got 4,000 friends on Facebook. what does that tell you? You know, my brain must be really big or something, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Something like that. And one study also showed there might even be a genetic factor in who our friends are.
Mm-hmm.
What did James Fowler find out about this genetic factor?
Right. So he theorized that we might choose friends with similar genes, so that even if we're not able to propagate the species, we're supporting someone who could then go on and propagate our same genes. And the gene in specific that he looked at is related to alcoholism. And so friend groups tend to share this gene. So a more practical explanation for this is that these people are meeting together in bars and drinking together, and people who don't have this gene don't meet in bars and don't drink together. So it might just be another, you know, manifestation of shared interests. But it is an interesting clue into that question we talked about earlier. Why is a one-year-old attracted to another one-year-old? Maybe there's this unconscious recognition of, hey, we share genes. We just don't know yet.
Again, Carlin Flora's book is Friendfluence, The Surprising Ways Friends Make Us Who We Are. She's in town for the UMKC Kaka Fair Chair Lecture. That lecture tomorrow is sold out. And it's been such a pleasure to have you here, Carlin. Thanks
for
coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Bob, Brent, Tomas, I'm sorry we couldn't get to all your phone calls here. And coming up in our second half today, the man who jumped off the top of the Liberty Memorial this morning. And the good news is his parachute deployed just in time. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.